Kathleen Kitchen spent the last few years traveling all over the country interviewing leaders and administrators in classical Christian schools, and she's identified the characteristics and distinctives of thriving schools and how they are in a unique position to transform our children, which she details in her new book, First Things First. In these uncertain times, her insights are needed as many parents are examining with a fresh perspective their school choices as they head into the fall. You don't want to miss this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for Raising the Next Generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Well, welcome to Basecamp Live. Davies Owens here on the line with Kathleen Kitchen. How are you, Kathleen?
I'm doing well, thanks. And you, Davies?
I am doing well. It's so good to have you on the show. You have written a book, literally hot off the press, called First Things First, and it's all about keeping your classical Christian school on track. So this book has been the culmination of a lot of work, it sounds like.
Yes, yes.
So, Kathleen, tell me a little bit about, we're going to get into some of the book and how it, I think, applies really to a lot of where our parents are, our culture is today, making decisions for what's best for our children. But just so people get to know you, give us a little bit of your story. Where have you been over the years as far as being an educator and what the experiences that you've had?
Sure. I was born in the Midwest and raised on the East Coast and then came down to Maryland and Virginia, where I was a teacher. I've taught in public school, community college. And then when our little girl was about school age, we heard about this different kind of school, classical Christian education. We went to the open house and were completely sold on going to it. I prayed for 2 years, as I was a parent and volunteer there, I prayed for 2 years to work there, and the Lord granted that. So I worked for many years. And I've taught in now a couple of different schools for classical Christian. I've also conducted classical Christian education homeschool tutorials. And I am just completely sold that this is the way to go. I had actually had Latin in my background. I actually had debates, even though I'm from a different era. And I loved Latin and I loved having debates. And I wanted my kids to have that. But even more importantly, I really wanted them to be in a place where Christ was central and yeah, that they would have a robust education.
Yeah, you have a really unique vantage point. I think for so many of us who weren't educators professionally, maybe early on, to have where you've been, which is, in a public school environment, you've community college, homeschool. I mean, you've kind of looked at it from many different angles. And it's helpful, I think, especially right now, and maybe just kind of go ahead and put this on the table. Again, we're living life in a cultural moment, in a cultural reality. It's been a very long and unprecedented, love that word now, season this past spring, kind of in the summer months right now. We don't know what's coming in the fall. And I think a lot of families are, on the one hand, reevaluating lots of things when it comes to the education of their children. You know, are we going to be at home again? And maybe some are saying like, this is something we should consider. Others are like, no, I will be the first in the carpool line. We're definitely going back and really love our schools. I want us to talk about some things that you've discovered as you've been in the midst of conversations around the world with classical Christian educators, administrators, trying to understand, again, as you've written this book on kind of first things first, like there is something really unique about this classical Christian education. So talk to us again a little bit about why did you write the book? And we'll talk about how that, I think some of the things you've discovered that have a lot of relevance for us right now as we think about what the fall is going to look like for our children. So why did you write the book?
Well, back in 2017, the Lord called me to write the book. And then the fire hose began. I was up at 1 a.m. scribbling as fast as I could, gave me all the chapter titles, continued to give me step after step, different schools where there was just a truly biblical foundation and strong classical Christian education at these schools. So he led me literally, as the Bible says, from strength to strength, going from one person, and then that person would tell me about someone else. And I literally kind of took stepping stones across the country and went as far as we were out in the West. We were in the East. We were down in Florida. We're down in Texas, Midwest, interviewing different heads of school, teachers, students, and just finding out what made their school healthy. What were the first things first that really anchored them? And it was something that I could almost perceive as the beautiful aroma of Christ. From the minute I'd be on their website, the minute I'd walk in their school, you could just tell they were really keeping first things first.
So, and this was, again, no small task. I don't know anyone else that I've talked to that has had the journey that you've been on, which, again, is meeting and directly interviewing. I mean, your book is, what, 260 pages? This is amazing. And again, not that it's too long, but it just shows the level of robust research you've been doing. How many heads of schools and schools did you encounter as you were doing this research?
You know, that was something I thought, well, I need to interview 100 heads of school and I need to interview, you know, 200 teachers. And the Lord made it clear to me that just as a blood test, when we go to the doctor and get a blood test, they take a sample of it. They don't take all of your blood. They take a sample. And so the Lord led me really to actually, it was maybe half a dozen to a dozen schools where where things are going very well. So using that sense, you know, once you've seen several schools, you can see there are certain principles that I don't need to duplicate by interviewing yet another 100 schools that I know are doing really well.
Right.
With classical Christian, I started seeing patterns and I went with that.
That makes perfect sense. And again, the book is, if you are a school administrator or teacher, I can't encourage you to get a copy, and we'll talk more about how to do that at the end of the podcast. But these distinctives, these aroma, you know, what really makes the aroma of the school attractive and beautiful. And again, we could probably do a 5-part series on this because there's so many things, Kathleen, but maybe just for take a moment as you think about just what are the distinctives. If you're talking to someone who's maybe not familiar with classical Christian, or maybe their children more likely are in a classical Christian school, and maybe it's just they need that reminder right now of like, what is so special about this school? Because that Khan Academy thing online we've been doing sure seems like it would get the job done. What are we missing when we kind of jump over some of those distinctives, and what are they? What would be maybe the first thing you'd say, this is what really makes a classical Christian school amazing and important for us to be a part of?
I would say the very first thing first is Christ there? Are you sensing his aroma as you're meeting the people who are running the school, the teachers you're interacting with? It's really about relationship. So do the administrators have a relationship with Christ? Do the teachers? We're all growing. I know, speaking as a mom, we were Christians when we signed up for classical Christian education. I cannot overemphasize how much I'm so thankful to the Lord about how he grew my husband and me as Christians. It just was explosive. So to me, it's about relationship. Do you have a relationship with Christ? And then you have that special relationship with teachers. You know, we talk about schools being alma maters, our nourishing mothers. Well, our primary educators, of course, are our parents. So we as parents know that's our call, our calling. But here now we can team in a partnership with other teachers and administrators for a wonderful teamwork that as a homeschool tutorial, I do a classical Christian homeschool tutorial now. That has been one of the most beautiful aspects of going through COVID, as hard as it was. And I am so with all teachers and parents everywhere. This was really rough. It was tough learning all these new processes. But what emerged was, as I partnered with parents, we had a closer relationship. And I know that can be hard with a larger class, But I'm not discouraged by that, because Jesus is all about being with us. And as Christian teachers, we are with your children. As a parent, I loved that my children were getting teachers who love the Lord, love their subject, and they loved my child. That's irreplaceable in this day of great isolation, even more as we're in COVID, and great fragmentation. So relationships to me.
Well, and it seems like
absolutely central.
I'm sure you've got stories too, because there's just some rich examples of teachers that have said, I miss my students and I want to figure out ways to reach out to them even over this digital platform. What have you seen that's just another reminder of the richness of these relationships?
Well, this probably doesn't sound classical and Christian, but to me, it was absolutely delightful. We would be doing our sessions on Google Duo, and then my students, Millie the dog would crop up, and it became more personal. Yeah. I loved it. I got to know them better. And then even through their pets, through what they were dealing with at home, whether it was their dad was out of work and was working on the roof and we were still trying to do education, they learned discipline and focus. It was going to hammer away on the roof, but we were going to keep doing the lesson, or Millie the dog hops up on someone's lap. It became more personal even. And I think that's just really critical, that this is not just about information. This is about how we're forming the characters of our children and our students. And for me, I got inroads to my students' lives through COVID that I would not have had necessarily. So I know it was extremely difficult. I don't want to underemphasize that. But I got to know my students better, and I could love them in a different way that was, I don't know, more relational in a way, I'd say.
That's a great example. I keep quoting Charles Dickens. It's the best of times and the worst of times. And there's a lot that's not so great, but there's some really good things when, you know, when the family dog gets to come to school with you. And, you know, that's, there's a silly side to that, but there's something, I think, again, back to why is classical Christian education so distinctive and so important and not just, quote, another educational option. And I think, again, it's really hard, to your point, for most of us that didn't grow up in this classical Christian world, and education was just kind of learn, quote, stuff and give it back on a test, and it was information. I'm the first one to get in line and say, just do that online. Just, that's fine. Go to the Khan Academies and watch the lecture and write the notes. Mm-hmm. But if it's about this idea of becoming, Christ in presence, you know, sort of embodied in the world of life on life interaction, that can happen in online, but it certainly is part of the nature of our schools. So as you've, again, sort of traveled the country and talked to educators, you're seeing that the aspect of relationship is really the most dominant distinctive that you see. You can't get anywhere else.
Absolutely. And now that I'm the mother of adult children who did go through all three stages of the trivium, I see them, they're in their 20s. I see them continuing those relationships with teachers and mentors that they had back at their classical Christian school, as well as the friendships that they forged with the students in the school as well.
So I could see somebody saying, maybe listening, going, well, yeah, but my kids are at, you know, XYZ school, it's not classical Christian, but they have really good friends and the teachers are actually really good people and they do write notes and they check in. And so, you know, what is there something else other than just being friendly? Are we, that makes our relationships rich and different?
Yes, I think that as we go back to add fontes to the fountains, to what has been the best that has been written, studied, experimented with, you know, the theorems that have been discovered, we have a faculty that has richly been immersing themselves and delighting in the rich fare that is classical and Christian, with Christ sovereignly integrating all of this. I've developed curriculum in the past when I worked in public school. I've examined curriculum just as a parent. I've seen some schools have a very vague idea, not classical Christian schools, but others, when I was looking for a school for our daughter, where they really don't have a compass, not only for the curriculum, but also just for who are we really forming? And I love what C.S. Lewis said, a child cannot know the love of Christ until they are loved with the love of Christ. So too, how can a child know that depth of relationship and the depth of rich Christian literature and history that studies the centuries and sweeps instead of a montage? You know, you have that deeper connection with people who can bring that to your child, and you can team together with that. So I think that partnership is something that would be greatly lacking if we were to just say, oh, I'll just go to XYZ.
Right. Right. Digitalschool.com. That's right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, Kathleen. I want to come back. This is super encouraging to me because, again, the reminder that not all education is the same. I think we all know that generically, but to hear it from you, to know that you've had this journey you've been on, these conversations, these observations, that you've beautifully articulated the relational aspect of our schools, that there's just nowhere else you're going to get that kind of Christ-centered care and concern and connection that we can deliver. But it's complemented by this, by the curriculum, as you're talking about. So why don't we take a break? We'll come back, and I want to hear more from your perspective and on First Things First and this unique material that we're putting in front of our students. It's not just another worksheet. There's some pretty amazing power to the content that they're looking at and why it's been selected. So let's come back in just a moment and we'll talk more about that. He's worked with families for more than 30 years as a licensed professional counselor and marriage family therapist. It's time for a quick encouragement on the best practices of raising the next generation. We call it a McCurdy moment. So Keith, we've talked before about this idea. If you ask a parent today, average parent on the sidewalk, what do you want for your child when they've grown up and they're leaving home and moving out of the world? What one thing do you want? And I bet the answer would be to be happy. So we all laugh, but there's a part of me that thinks, well, I do want my children to be happy, and I don't want them just to be frozen, chosen, classical kids walking around doing Play-Doh all day long with no smile on their face. What's wrong? Is there a problem with their kids wanting to be happy?
You know, I think that's a great thing for us to consider, because culture shoves that at us left and right. You know, it's all about our children feeling good. And if we think of it, look at it in the world of psychology has jumped on that bandwagon, or pretty much led that bandwagon, that any negative emotional state must be removed. And we should do everything we can to increase positive emotional states. The problem with that is pursuing a certain feeling is not the goal. It really should be learning to live differently. I'll think of a girl that came to see me not long ago, and she wanted to know if I could help her feel better. And my comment to her was, I have no idea. And she got angry in my office, and she said, what do you mean? That's your job. My last two or three therapists told me they could help me feel better. And so I asked her, I said, well, what happened? She said, it didn't work. And I reflected to her. I said, well, I have no idea if I can help you feel better, but I could probably help you live better. And in my experience, when we get away from targeting one emotion and instead realize emotions are stimulated by other things, we can then get to the real issues. How are you really living in life? And so, you know, there are a lot of ways I can make someone feel happy. We can give drugs and make somebody feel happy. It doesn't mean we've actually improved anything in their life. What I would rather have is not students that necessarily are always happy, but those that are more sturdy and capable. They actually can deal with difficult situations, which means they need to feel, you know, those tough feelings sometimes. There's a reason at times we're depressed. There's a reason for anger. There's a reason for anxiety. Just eliminating those does not necessarily help us at all.
Right. When it seems like, and yet it's interesting, you aim for it and you miss it, but it's a byproduct of just a life well lived.
Right. Exactly.
Which is great how that worked out.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, they say, well, so, you know, so you're in the business of psychology and, you know, you're trying to make everybody feel better. And I say, not really. I said, a lot of my job is really helping someone learning to live well in a broken world. You know, being broken people in a broken world, how can I live well in that?
Yeah.
Rather than always feel happy in that.
Yeah. And because feelings are fleeting, and feelings are always whatever made you happy before, you need more of it to get you happier again. And then it's just an endless cycle of guaranteed not going to make you happy.
So. Right. Absolutely.
Great. Well, I think I'm happy after that conversation. Thanks, Keith. Got a question for Keith to answer on a future McCurdy moment? Well, send it to us at info@basecamplive.com and learn more about Keith McCurdy on the speaking page on the Basecamp Live website. Welcome back to Basecamp Live. On the line with Kathleen Kitchen. Kathleen has written an impressive book, First Things First, Keeping Your Classical Christian School on Track. And as you've traveled literally the nations and had many, many conversations, Kathleen, you've really got a keen sense of what makes an excellent school and why our schools are distinctive. Before the break, we talked about relationships, and we were just starting to talk about this idea of curriculum. So that sounds like a very dry and dusty thing, but why is curriculum so important as we think about it from a parent's standpoint, what our kids are engaging in all day? What is so distinctive about classical Christian curriculum?
Well, just as in our lives as Christians, we want to be looking back to the source of all life, of creation, of our salvation, Jesus Christ, and reading his book. As we in classical Christian education have developed curriculum, we are continuously going back to the Bible, number one, to set the foundation for our curriculum. So we are not just going to what are the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, and going to the knowledge base for that. We're seeking to ask, show us the ancient ways, God. Show us where we need to, what the paths are that we need to be on. The curriculum that have been developed at several classical Christian schools has been developed over many years and has been tried in the fire many years and has come out with impacts that impress on our students. I just know that when my own kids, when they talk about what happened back in Bible class or what happened back in English class or in math, they go back, as we've already said, number one, to that relationship with the teacher. Who was that person as they were standing in front of the classroom? So in one sense, as one head of school has said, the teacher is the curriculum. So who are the people that you're placing in your children's lives? I love that I had a number of people who were teachers and then became colleagues as my kids went through school. Those people were speaking God's truth, Jesus's truth, into each one of my child's lives. And they were loving them with the love of Christ. So right there, it starts with relationship. Now, with the curriculum itself, do we have a curriculum guide? Do we even have an overarching notion of what do we really want to do in all of this? Do we have a picture of the kind of graduate we hope by God's great providence to help develop? So do we have a curriculum? Do we have a curriculum guide that shows us the objectives we have? Not just, oh, we're doing this textbook and that. Another director of curriculum told me the curriculum is not the textbook. And yet we, in our hurry, I've been a homeschool mom too, we in our hurry to get these great plans in line for our kids for the fall, we can run in almost a panic to what can I find on the internet? And oh, I've got these books at home. And sometimes, yeah, God is going to provide. If God's leading you to do that, then by all means, first things first, you need to follow what God is telling you to do for your family. But I would urge people to stay with this, because stay with classical Christian school, education schools, because there is, again, that relationship. I could trust these teachers. I knew they loved my child. I knew they were pouring in terrific lessons and had wonderful, yes, worksheets, and yes, discussions, and yes, debate topics.
It's kind of the perfect, you know, it's the chocolate and peanut butter combo in my mind. You've got amazing Christ-centered people combined with distinct curriculum. And so you've had, again, in your life journey, we were talking before a little bit about just you've actually
work to develop curriculum and not just in classical Christian environments. How is the curriculum that most of these schools that you've studied as classical Christian schools, how is it different maybe than kind of other types of approaches to curriculum that you've seen?
Yes. First of all, you begin with prayer and you ask God for the direction, not what human beings are asking for the direction. So I would say first things first, prayer to the Lord to guide your curriculum process. And then second, what are the best things? What are the best works? What are the most important aspects to focus on for your education? So I think sometimes we can get on bandwagons. We have to be on guard about that all the time. But in classical Christian education, we're going back to the ancient ways. What are those books that change your life, that change your loves, that help form your Christian character? When Jesus was teaching, he was always telling story. It's not just there in the literature classroom. It may be, I remember my grandfather used to say, it was those conversations between the classes that are so important. So it's also that teacher reaching out to that student with an email saying, great job on this, and maybe taking that student further into, have you thought about how the Bible looks at this? You're not going to get that in a lot of curriculum, even in some very, very wonderful curriculum that's been developed. All the roads need to lead back to Christ, number one. Secondly, is it the best? Are they best things? We have a limited amount of time with teaching our children. We have this 13-year path, at least in terms of more formal education. And in order to have that full enculturation, we want to bathe our kids. We as parents, we want to bathe our kids with what's good. I actually found out that the word parent comes from the Latin parere. Parere is how I would have pronounced it back in when I took Latin in school, bringing forth. So we literally are birthing children. But then as parents, as teachers, we are seeking to bring forth and encourage great virtue. And it's these stories, these teachers who connect with our kids.
So Kathleen, other than, so just completely hear the idea of the teacher. I mean, that there's no question that's first and foremost, but I mean, I could hear someone, I mean, I'm thinking of questions people might be asking like, well, this is interesting, but isn't there kind of more contemporary curriculum or maybe a common core or a technically oriented curriculum? I mean, why this fixation on kind of the old books and the old ways? Is that just nostalgia? Is there something really inherently different as you've, because again, you've been on curriculum selection committees and not in, you know, maybe even in other contexts besides classical Christian, and the filter of what makes a good book is different. They're not all the same in terms of what, so how do you see those differences? Because I could just see like, why not pick a more contemporary book? Isn't it the same if it's a loving teacher?
Well, I know the Lord says to bring out the old and new treasures out of the storehouse. Mm. So I know it takes a good, sometimes 50 years to judge a classic if we're talking about literature. So we do want to be careful about what we're selecting in more recent literature, but I'm not against doing that. But I know when we look back, we look at, these are vehicles. One professor I had in college said, I was an English major, so he said, when you're teaching literature, you're using the book as a vehicle to talk about eternal things. You're looking to talk about, what is God saying about this? How is man being regarded, whether it's in a very dignified image of God way or very sinful? What does that say about our hearts and how we need to grow as human beings in truth and grace and grace and truth? This is a vehicle for talking about life issues that you often do not get. And as a matter of fact, as a side story here, I do know of someone who has been learning, you know, with Common Core and with public schools. That person loves books. They did one literature book their entire year in literature, 1 year, because they were studying other documents. I said, but what about all these great books like Jane Eyre? And no, I had to read them on my own. And isn't that sad? Here, what's so wonderful in classical Christian school is you have a community of learners. You have the great conversation. You have people that you can talk about the great discoveries of scientists, the great theorems, that the beauty and the language of math, that you can talk about the sweep of centuries and how we are in this very difficult time right now with COVID. We can be studying through our history about what were other hard times with the Spanish influenza. I think of with the Black Death back in the late Middle Ages, how that impacted society, how Christians were being attacked as being the source of the problems. We can look back through history, moving to literature. What do we learn about being a human being? What are the things that we really want for our children and hunger? We as moms and dads, we want the best for our children. And classical Christian education offers a marvelous partnership. I thank God for the teachers that he placed in my children's lives.
Well, and again, you've got such a fascinating vantage point in all of these conversations. I mean, what I'm hearing you say is really just classical Christian curriculum is framing up the right questions, because that you have to have the right question to begin with, and then you have to have the right answer. And it seems like a lot of times, even in classical schools that are not Christian, which is a growing trend, you get the right questions from the great books and the great ideas, but you struggle. I mean, I think it would be a lot of respect for people who are in those environments, but it's hard when you don't have the freedom to turn around and go, but there is a truth, there is an anchor point. It's not just, what does this mean to you? So I think what's the question and what's the answer, and having it in a context with a teacher that can guide them. I mean, this is what for millennia has formed, you know, cultured people, so that we don't all turn into the barbarians because we don't have anything to... And I think it's a whole other podcast on why are the barbarians taking over the world, where I'm not sure that they've ever really learned what the right questions are, and much less what the right answers are. And it's the beautiful thing about this transcendent nature of the curriculum, as you kind of describe it. So well said. Well, thank you for your, you know, and our time is kind of running out, but I want to encourage people to get a copy of your book, especially if you're a school administrator. This is a fantastic, thoughtful resource. So Kathleen, where can people get a hold of your book? And then I know you're working on some blogs and other projects. So share with us a little bit here at the end, what you're up to.
They can visit my website on cceontrack.com. They can email also at info@cceontrack.com. I also will be having a virtual vendor booth at both the ACCS conference, the Association for Classical and Christian Schools conference, this week on Thursday and Friday, with a Q&A time on Friday at 10:15. And I also will be a virtual vendor at the SCL, Society for Classical Learning conference, next week, Thursday and Friday.
That's great. Well, we appreciate your being a part of all those conferences and being a part of our conversation and offering this wonderful resource and perspective. And then there are some upcoming things as well that you're going to be doing in terms of blogs and content, right? Is that
Yes, that's correct.
So more coming from you, Kathleen. Well, thank you so much for your time and for your hard work and for encouraging us, especially in these challenging days that we're in the midst of. And it is good news to hear of the success of so many schools that we have the privilege of being a part of. But thank you for your time, and we look forward to having you back on and hearing more about your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Davies.
Hey, thanks again for listening to this episode of Basecamp Live. You know, the vision of this podcast is that it's meant to be a conversation. And I do a lot of the talking, but I would love to hear from you, because I know that these episodes are inspiring to parents and teachers and really anyone who is interested in investing in the next generation. So I want to invite you right now to email info@basecamplive.com. Let me know where you're listening from. Let me know any thoughts or comments you have. And I do want to say a special welcome to our many international subscribers who are all over the world. If you're not following us on social media, check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and sign up for our newsletter at basecamplive.com. I'm also traveling and visiting schools all around the country now, consulting, training, and connecting. Let me know where you are. I'd love to visit and bring the Basecamp Roadshow to your school. Blessings to you, and thanks for listening.